Hey, everybody. Welcome to this week's episode of the Brief Nerdy Podcast. I am your host. My name is Ryan. This week, once again, joining me is my good friend Trent and co-host.
Hello. Your name is Ryan.
What?
Is that what you just said?
I don't know what I say. What did I say?
You're like, my name is Ryan. This week.
Only this week. Previously, I was known as TJ, but this week.
You'll be changing it to something else.
Yes. Well, this week's TJ, though, is TJ. Hey, TJ.
That's right. It's me, the one and only for this week.
It's me, TJ. How have you guys been doing?
Really good, actually.
Did you have a nerdy week? Maybe not so brief?
I went to the movies three times.
Three times?
I know, too.
Yeah. Holler.
So you saw, what, Kingsman...
Lego.
Yep, Lego Ninjago and It. I saw It before the podcast last week, but that was still the same week. So.
Oh.
Good call.
Okay. Yeah. I was going up for like 7 days.
We're being technical, but that's fine.
Well, what else? I was going to be like, I was going to take a shot in the dark and be like, did you see Mother? Like, were you one of like the 500 people that saw Mother?
Oh, I almost did, and then I read more about it. I'm like, I just need to read about this. I just need to see exactly what it is. And I'm like, yeah, I'm glad I didn't see it.
It's not people worth seeing it, even if it's free.
People are saying it's a Golden Globe contender.
So they don't mean Raspberry Award?
No, they're saying that the Golden Globes likes to make like a splash and to be controversial because they're not the Oscars, and so they might, you know.
Yeah, sure, whatever. I don't pay attention to that stuff anyways, really.
I just thought it was entertaining.
Every now and then I hear something I like one, and I'm like, ooh, neat, and then I forget about it.
It's like, oh, you have little award syndrome.
Yeah, I heard the second half of that movie is just, like, relentless. Like, really loud, and just things are constantly screaming and eating people. And
I have no idea what it's even about. Like, I honestly, I read a synopsis and I still don't know what it's about. Like, it's a woman with a guy named him and they have a house and people keep showing up and she's really mad about it. Like, that's all I got from it.
Yeah, is it the villain for the Powerpuff Girls?
Well, in case any listeners are planning on seeing it, I won't say, but let's just say it's based on a book. The end.
Okay. All right.
And the book is not Mother. It's based on another book.
Is the book good?
Yeah, I guess arguably, depending on who you are.
Depending on who you ask.
Is it based on the famous Stephen King book, It?
No, but that would be interesting. You know what I've always wanted to do? If I were a big filmmaker and I could make whatever movies I'd want, I would always want to make unofficial sequels to other movies. Because like, there's that whole like theory that the villain from the Saw movies is really Kevin McAllister, like grown up.
I've heard that before.
Oh, really?
So I just think, yeah. I just think that would be so cool, and that's fun. Like, you know, fan fiction. I mean, maybe it's true, but I just think that'd be so cool to like see a movie and then you realize like, oh wow, this was a sequel to this. I mean, Split kind of did that this year, but. I don't know. I think it can be done, and I'm surprised more people haven't done it yet.
That's kind of an amazing theory that I had never heard before. That just kind of blew my mind.
Yeah, I'm sure they just don't want to get sued, or maybe Hollywood's such a small world they don't want to step on anybody's toes and get blacklisted. Or,
but I think you like could. That. I think you could dance around it though, without just openly saying like, "Yeah, this is a sequel to this." So I don't know. I think it'd be. Yeah. I would like to see someone pull it off.
I would also like to see it pull it off. That being said, so.
Yeah.
All right, let's get into this week's round robin. Continuing with our countdown to Halloween, that's over a month away still.
Sorry, I just get amused by that every time.
That's okay. We're going to talk about our favorite Halloween costume that we've ever
worn. Next year we should start our countdown to Halloween in like June. Just do like what stores do for Christmas. Just be like, whatever. F it, it's Halloween because I say it is.
So I'll go ahead and get started with this one. I believe I was 9 years old, and this is probably not that creative of an answer, but I was one of those families to where like I would always have like semi-homemade Halloween costumes growing up, or just kind of cheap stuff or easy stuff. Like I played baseball like in the spring, and so like one Halloween I was a baseball player. So that's kind of how it was for me most of the time growing up. However, being the 9-year-old I was super obsessed with the Power Rangers. Anyone who's listened to this podcast knows it's true. But I finally got a purchase costume. My mom purchased me a white Ranger, Power Ranger costume. And so wasn't super high quality, I would say. But
white Power Ranger. Yep.
But I mean, it was just a mask and the suit kind of felt like maybe like a trash bag, but better quality. I don't even know what that, like a poncho, I guess, quality.
That's cool.
Of fabric, but it was still looked authentic-ish for a 9-year-old costume.
That's cool.
So happy that year that I was just like walking around as Tommy, the White Ranger.
Well, Tommy's costumes, he had the extra shield that he got to wear.
Yep.
Got to wear. Got to war. Got to war. It's been a long day. He got to war, so, WAR. That's what I meant.
Yeah, so I just remember being super giddy, like walking around all Halloween night that night. So,
that's being cool. Power Ranger. See, my mom never let me be anything cool like that. Like, she always wanted me to be like scary stuff. She would never let me be like a ninja or like a Power Ranger, Ninja Turtle, like anything like that. I always had to be like scary. So,
like a monster of some kind.
I think she just didn't want to buy me like weapons, like fake weapons. Because I had some, but I had like the same plastic sword probably for like 8 years growing up. So I am envious of your Power Ranger costume.
It was a good year. A good year.
Nice.
Yeah.
So what about favorite you, Trent? Ever? I'm trying to remember what grade it was. I was still at Pembroke, which means it was sometime second grade? I don't know. I was young. First or second grade, somewhere around there, we had a day where they finally let us wear costumes to school for the day. Like, I think it was like the Friday before Halloween. And I was super excited, and we went out, and I was really into Ninja Turtles at the time, and so I got a full-on, like, Leonardo from Ninja Turtles costume. It had the shell and everything, and, like,
nice.
the wrist wraps, and I had the blue bandana thing, and I had two, like, really flimsy katanas that you could technically pull out if you wanted to, but they were, like, really not great, but they looked cool.
They were decorative katanas?
Yes, very decorative. And I got really mad at the school because they wouldn't let us wear masks, and they counted that little, like, you know, narrow strip over the eyes as a mask. So I was just, like, running around as, like, this turtle with katanas, and I was like, whatever, it's fine. But I got to wear the whole thing on Halloween, and it was probably my favorite one, since that's one of the only ones I can remember anyway.
See, that's awesome. And then you get to keep, like, pieces of that for, like, just when you're playing when it's not Halloween. I was always jealous of that.
It was pretty cool. And, like, the shell was padded enough that it almost, like you could – my brother and I would, like, wrestle, and, like, I would just, like, bounce into him because of this big padded shell thing. It was fun.
I liked it. See, that's cool. The closest I ever got to being something cool like that was we had a Halloween party at school. I want to say maybe, like, third grade. I was a mad scientist, so I had, like, a bald cap with, like, crazy white hair and all that. And this other kid, Lloyd Jones, if you're listening, Lloyd Jones, I don't know if you are, you're probably not, but he was the Green Ranger, but he had like a really nice costume. Like it looked legit, like it'd be a good cosplay costume. And I was like, oh my gosh, can I please wear your shield, your gold shield? I'll let you wear my bald cap if you let me wear that. So he's like, okay, and we were sitting there watching a movie, and as soon as I put the shield on, the teacher saw that we were messing around, and she's like, hey, you two gotta stop, take that off, so... That's the closest I ever got to being the Green Ranger.
So sad.
It is kind of sad.
Yeah, it is. But now I'm an adult. I can vlog whatever I want.
You'll always be my Green Ranger, TJ.
Thank you.
Yeah,
thank
see, like,
you.
We already dubbed you.
So I think... no, that's true. Yeah, that's true. I think my most memorable costume, though, was... A lot of people don't realize, but Ghostface from Scream... That was a Halloween costume, like, years before that movie really? Was ever even, like, a thought in someone's mind. Yeah, that was, like, a generic, really? Like, costume you could buy. Yeah, it was the exact outfit, the same mask, the black, like, cloak and everything, and then you just buy a weapon. So like I was that. I had like a hook, like a bloody hook, like that you hold like a scythe kind of, but like
you
a handheld
it's not
one.
Not just that Scream came out a long time ago.
No, because I was little, and I knew I was little because this was a costume I was actually still able to wear at school, like mask and like fake bloody weapon. I was able to take that. So nice. Obviously nice. You can't do that anymore. But yeah, like a lot of people don't realize that Ghostface, like they didn't make that up for Scream. It was just a costume that they sold everywhere.
How times have changed.
It's really funny because, you know, they kind of made it out to kind of be a generic mask in the movie. And so, but I didn't think it was an actual generic mask. I thought it was a generic one they kind of created, you know. But.
Yeah, and yeah, I think a lot of people thought that because it looks like one that they would, but no, I mean, I'm not saying it was a similar mask. It was like the exact same mask. So,
I wonder if some guy got a royalty check that he was really happy with or really sad about afterwards.
Yeah. So I was Ghostface before Ghostface was a thing.
That's way cool.
Yeah. All right. Well, that was fun.
You're fun. All right. What games have you been playing? Trent, kick us off.
Well, mine's pretty boring. I've been playing a ton of XCOM with all the new expansion stuff. And actually, it's actually my first time through with the expansion content and all the DLC that came out post-launch.
I hear it's affecting your sleep life.
A little bit. It's one of those, I think it was it a Thursday night or Friday night? I'm like, okay, it's 10 o'clock. I'll just do one more mission. I'll be fine. I'll just do one more mission, and then I'll go to bed. Then I look over, and it's 1 o'clock in the morning. I'm like, what happened? So it's been really fun. A lot of the new stuff is very exciting, and it kind of lengthens the game a little bit. It allows you to kind of slow the pace down and really kind of focus on like how you want to specialize your team and your tech and all that stuff, which I find really cool. So it's been really, really fun. And then there's also playing lots of Ark. Because Ark.
I didn't know you played Ark.
GJ is a funny man.
Got a good chuckle out of me there. So TJ, why don't you talk a bit about what you're playing, and then we'll kind of transition it into some Metroid talk.
Yeah, so that is one of the things I was playing. Metroid Samus Returns on 3DS. I beat it. I did not 100% it like you did. Spoilers. but yeah, I plan on going back to it. You know, and finishing that up, because that's always fun. Once you're fully powered up, just going back and finding all the hidden stuff. But yeah, we can talk a bit more about my thoughts and your thoughts on that here in a second. But the reason I wanted to finish it and move on without 100%ing it was because SteamWorld Dig 2 came out on Switch, and I believe it's out on other consoles tomorrow.
I haven't heard of it.
SteamWorld Dig is an awesome indie game that came out originally on 3DS like years ago, and then they put it on pretty much every system you can name. It's kind of like a Metroidvania style game, but you're digging. So like you have a pickaxe and you can dig, like the whole goal is to dig down deep, really far, and then find almost warp points to take you back to the surface, and all the jewels you find, you sell them to upgrade your equipment. So you get new abilities that can then like help you dig through other spaces to get to new places. So that's where it shares similarities to Metroid. So the best way to describe it is imagine like a 2D Metroid, but you're digging and you're permanently sculpting the map. So there's some dirt spots that will come back, but most of them, like, you're digging the path and that's it. So you really have to kind of plan, like, your paths and everything like that. But yeah, just as really good characters, a lot of fun. You don't necessarily need to play the first one to play the second one, but I'm absolutely loving it, and I would even go as far to say I'm glad I didn't play this before Metroid, because I think I would have liked Metroid less if I played this first. I feel like it takes the Metroid formula and really adds a lot to it. So, yeah, I highly recommend it. It's like $20, but well worth it. Nice. Been playing it, you know, as much as I can. I'm still not done with it, so it's pretty decent length too. But yeah, SteamWorld Dig 2.
SteamWorld Dig 2. Is it on PC by chance?
I believe it does come out on PC tomorrow. I think PS4 and PC tomorrow. So yeah, take a look, and you can find the first SteamWorld Dig probably really cheap. And that one is procedurally generated. So the most of the game's the same, but then like the actual like path you're going on and stuff, that's procedurally generated. The first one or the second one is not like that though. It is a set, like huge 2D open world.
Yeah, it came out on the 22nd, and it's gotten really good reviews.
No. Well, there you go. Yeah,
Very
so
nice.
I love it. I love it. I love it. I love it.
Add that to my wish list. It looks fun.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's talk a little Metroid. We're gonna just talk a bit about the game, but we're not gonna go into full spoilers.
Yeah, no spoilers.
It's kind of just our opinions on the game. Do you want to start, TJ, or should I?
Go for it. You start.
Well, I think this is in my top three Metroid games of all time. Only competing against Super and the original Prime, in my opinion.
Okay.
A few things that make it quickly stand out is, first off, the controls. They do a really, really good job of making you feel like you have complete control of Samus at all times and moving fluidly through the environments due to her abilities that she could get, but also, you know, grabbing the ledges and wall jumping and, you know, of course, the spider ball. It was great in its original inclusion in Metroid 2, but it's, you know, it just really soars here. Just really makes it a top contender in the Metroid games, in my opinion. And probably the biggest thing for me, and I know I mentioned, I think, to each of you already, but there's always that progression in Metroid game where you get a new ability and you get a little bit more powerful. And that's kind of just how Metroid games work. But this is probably the first time in a Metroid game where I've truly, like, once you reach a certain point, you're just like, I am a god. I am, like,
Yeah.
so powerful right now, you know. Just when you get to certain abilities, you're just like, you can't touch me, you know, anything on this planet, you know, except maybe the bosses. But I don't know, just like I really felt that this time. It's not something I think I felt quite as much, you know, with the exception of getting like the hyper beam at the end of Super Metroid or something like that. It just it really gave you that feeling, and so it made, you know, the latter half of the game that much more enjoyable for me. And going into the game, I was really wondering, if they're going to change or how they're going to alter the ending, and I won't go into what it is, so don't worry, but you know, that's kind of what they did for Zero Mission, you know, the remake of Metroid 1. They kind of added and did some extra things to the ending, and so I was really curious as to what they did, and I was very happy with what they decided to do, so to speak.
Yeah, the ending, it really surprised me. Because Metroid, I mean, there's like no dialogue at all, like in the whole game. And you do feel very isolated on this planet. Like you're all alone and you got to go hunt these 40 Metroids, you know, kill all of them. But as far as story goes, there's a few cutscenes, like before the bosses and everything. But then when you beat the game, there's like these panels that you can unlock, like these story panels. And no words, once again, just pictures. And they really go into like the depth of the Metroid lore that some of the other games really haven't gone, and it kind of provides this explanation as to why this is all happening and what's going on, and it's really, really intriguing. I never played much of the original Game Boy one, but Ryan, you said the ending of this, like the ending boss, is completely different. And we were talking about it a little bit before the show, and like the end boss is such a surprise. Like, don't look it up or anything. If you plan on playing it, just play it. It's a really, really good time at the end.
So, yeah, all around very, very good. I would say my only critiques I have with it are, I don't know if they could help it though, but it still kind of irked me, is that Samus is a lot weaker. Like, even if you have 10 to 12 like energy tanks, like a single hit from a boss toward the end game will take like four or five tanks away
Oh, yeah.
in a single hit. And you're just like, ow! Even though it
Yeah, the
doesn't really
game
feel
is
that way.
the game's pretty tough. I mean, especially with like the boss fights. And then there's like a few kind of boss-like sequences. There was one I died on like 10 times in a row. But yeah, I mean, the game is it's no joke. You really need to find those power-ups in it.
Yeah, and but I think it's kind of to compliment the good changes they made, because like I said, Samus feels a lot smoother and better controlled than before.
Oh, yeah.
If you think about Super Metroid, like Samus is basically a tank, and she's slow and floaty and can't really dodge attacks, especially not like this Samus can.
Yeah.
And so to make up for that in Super Metroid, they just have to make her tough and be able to take a ton of hits. Because when you go and you fight Ridley, unless you're some crazy good speedrunner or something like that, you're just going to sit there and like just take hits from Ridley in Super Metroid until you just manage to get enough super missiles in his face, you know? That's just kind of how that game worked for the most part, but not so much in here. You need to be able to to dodge and counter and do all that stuff to make sure you don't get hit, because when you get hit, it really hurts.
Yeah, and one thing they added, when you hold the L button, the L trigger, you stand in one spot, and then you can aim, like, freely, like, 360 degrees. And it's cool, because when she's aiming, it shows, like, a laser, like, a straight line, and then if you're going to hit an enemy, like, if they're in your sights, the laser changes colors. So it's a really quick way for you to see if you have a shot lined up. There's a grapple beam that you get, in, like, in most of the other Metroid games. And you could switch to it whenever you want, or if you're aiming at a grapple spot, when you shoot, it will automatically use the grapple beam. So
I love that.
Yeah, it's just really like quick little things they did with the controls to make sure you're never really like stopping to like, you know, switch weapons or anything like that. It's really neat.
I did get a little bit of hand cramps in either holding down L to kind of plant myself and shoot like you did there, but mostly when I was you have to hold down the R button to use your missiles. I really would have liked to toggle option, or since I had the new 3DS XL, I had like the extra L and R buttons. Like, why couldn't the big one be hold and the little one be toggle or something like that? I would have really preferred something like that, but especially during boss fights, because I tend to hold it down the whole time. So,
that's a really good idea. That extra like Z button to just switch. Yeah, that's cool.
So,
but.
Oh no, it's a very, very good game. It's a very good Metroid game. Another one, last thing that holds it back, in my opinion, and then it really can't be helped because they're remaking Metroid 2, but, you know, the whole game, for a very, very few exceptions, the only bosses you face are just Metroids, and, like, only three or four different versions of them. And so that leaves a lot to be desired. But, again, they can't really be helped because they're remaking a game that's already been established and a canon of Metroid Evolutions that already been established. So I feel this is a great example of if Nintendo doesn't want to make their own version of their game, you know, their own Metroid game in this case, to let a talented studio handle it. And since this studio has proven themselves with, you know, Samus Returns, I think they should get go ahead to create their own new original Metroid story, potentially even Metroid 5, so to speak.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, if you look at this and then you look at like Mario plus Rabbids, it's like when Nintendo, you know, gives them the like characters, like the license and stuff like that, and then works with them, you know, lets them create it, but, you know, works alongside them. I mean, so far the results have been great. And you're right. Now, you know, I'm sure Nintendo can go, okay, you did this, so now go make your own. Like, here's all the Metroid stuff you want. Like, just go. You don't need our help anymore.
Yep.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
Yeah. I would say one last thing. I don't want to talk about it too long, but I guess one gripe I had was I felt the game was a little too long. There's one part where, or at least one segment, maybe Ryan, you didn't have the same problem. I don't know. But I wasn't getting new power-ups like for a really long time, like new weapons or anything. And then there's a point where you just get a ton of them, like back to back to back to back. And then it goes for a long stretch where you don't get any. Like, I felt like they weren't spaced out evenly enough. And then you're going after these 40 Metroids. I feel like if they cut it down to 30, I feel like the pacing would have felt a bit better. Because, like, Zero Mission on Game Boy Advance, that's still my favorite Metroid. I remember beating that game and instantly jumping into a brand new game like, oh my gosh, I want to do that all over again. It was, like, the perfect length.
Yeah.
And this one, you can get through it. Like, I looked online and people are getting through it already in, like, 4 hours. It took me about 12. Mind you, I like put it down, you know, here and there. So it was probably realistically more like 10, maybe 11. But yeah, I don't know. I just felt like it was a little longer than it needed to be. But it's still a fun game, like overall. You're never bored.
Yeah, it's kind of funny you mentioned that. That was kind of one of my biggest critiques for the other Metroidvania game I played recently, Hollow Knight. Because it's like a 30-40 hour Metroidvania game.
Holy cow, I didn't know that game was that long.
It's super long. Like, you don't get the double jump until like maybe like 20 hours in, and then you're just like, okay, well now I have access to over half the map again now. So
yeah.
it's long. So yeah, that critique of having Metroidvania be long.
That's intense.
All right.
Well, that is our Metroid talk.
Yep, and that's all I played this week, so
How does it compare to Ori?
Ooh. That's a hard decision, because I like them both for different reasons.
I'm a mean person.
Yeah. I mean, like, I actually watched a video about Ori and its design this weekend, so it's kind of relevant, too. But combat-wise, Ori is inferior, obviously, because all you do is have your little orb, and if you're near an enemy, you just spam a button and it auto-attacks it kind of thing. But Ori doesn't, and Ori has some quote-unquote boss battles, but Ori's boss battles are the sequences you get of, like, escaping the dungeon once you've finished it.
The level itself, basically.
And so the platforming within Ori is just leaps and bounds above anything Metroid can hope to achieve. Whereas Metroid is, you know, about making yourself more powerful so you could overcome new enemies with a little bit of a movement abilities in there as well, of course. But I would say Samus's abilities are more on the offensive, or at least, you know, getting a new suit to let you access a new area, like in the various suits, so you could access the heat areas, you know. Whereas Ori is more towards movement and traversal, and so. Music, I still have to give Ori the win, even though I love Metroid music. They did a lot of remixes of, you know, Super Metroid songs and Metroid 2 songs in this one, so both of which I loved. But just, you listen to every track in Ori and, like, almost shed a tear. So.
Still need to play Ori.
You cool. do. It's good.
It's good as... I don't, it's just not enough. Incredible.
Like I said, during E3, it was the only, like, game announcement that I got, like, super emotional about.
I had no idea it was coming, and it literally floored me. Like, literally almost fell out of my chair.
Literally almost. All right, well, let's talk about what we're watching. Trent, why don't you kick us off there?
So, finished American Ninja Warrior this last week. That was exciting. It ended about as I was expecting. It's kind of a weird show in that, like, you can have an entire season of a reality show where you build up towards the finals and you have this really exciting thing that happens and then no one wins. Spoiler alert for anyone who hasn't seen this season.
Dang it, Trent.
Sorry.
After the podcast.
It's been over a week. I'm sorry. But yeah. So it's kind of weird in that way, but it was still really fun to watch and see how everyone did. Because a lot of it is just really about, like, the stories of people and how well they do. And, like, a lot of it's, like, you know, did I do better than last year type thing for a lot of the athletes. And so it's still fun and gratifying. And then I was chatting with TJ about Big Brother. And I happened to go and look at the results. okay, another spoiler alert for Big Brother. If you haven't seen it and you want to know who wins, skip forward a minute or so. But I was just pleased as all get out that Paul lost.
That's all that matters in the long run. F you, Paul.
So happy. And, like, I know that makes me, like, a bitter viewer. But he was just such a douche and would lie without needing to and would make fun of people behind their back and, like, for no reason other than just to be malicious, in my opinion. And so it was just like, I mean, yeah, he played an incredible game and he strategy was fantastic. He ran the game, but jury management's part of the game. And if you can't get them to vote for you in the end, then you don't win.
Yeah, so basically, Ryan, like, that's the thing. So at some point, whenever someone gets voted out of the house, they become a jury member. And then at the end, the jury decides, like, they vote for, you know, one person or the other. So in this, it came down to one vote. One vote decided the whole thing. And this guy, Paul, lost. And the thing that me and Trent were kind of talking about was Paul, like, I can understand why a lot of people don't like him, but he had every single person playing the game thinking that they had an alliance with him, like a partnership. Like, everyone in the house, when they all were getting the jury, they were talking about it, and they're like, well, no, I was going to be in the final two with Paul. Or, well, no, that's not true, because I was going to be. So, like, he played everyone in the house. Like, everyone was a moron. And then in the end, most of them were bitter, so they voted against him. And I'm like, I feel like he deserved the win, because the other guy, Josh, that won, I don't feel like he really did anything. he kind of just like coasted along. And I mean, if you're talking about Paul, like talking about people behind their back and lying, it's like Josh was just a straight up bully sometimes. I didn't appreciate the stuff that he did with that.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons why a lot of the players actually voted for him instead, because they said that, yeah, he was mean and he would get up in people's faces, but he was in your face and would tell you how he felt about you rather than being, you know, conniving and malicious behind your back.
Yeah, but then he would go and cry afterwards, like, instantly.
Sure. I mean, he's an unstable, very emotional, mostly crazy person, but...
Makes for good television.
I mean, he's...
That's right.
In my opinion, for reality TV, because this is an argument that goes back all the way to the first season of Survivor, or maybe even further, is that, you know, like, what is a legitimate win for, like, a Survivor or Big Brother game? And to me, like, the winner wins. Like, if you win, it's legitimate. You know, you had the rules. I don't know. I mean, you can definitely argue who should have won.
Yeah. Oh, no, I get what you're saying. But, like, I think back, like, Derek, a couple seasons ago, he played everyone in the house, but he didn't do any of the stuff that you're talking about with Paul. And, like, he absolutely deserved to win, and that's why he did.
Yeah, for sure. Well, and he treated everyone, even as he was voting them out, like, no one felt bad about it.
Yeah.
I mean, he's like, yeah, I outplayed you, and I can explain how and why, but I never, like, called you all puppets and that I was your puppet master, even though that...
Yeah.
Could like be argued that is exactly what he did, but
yeah,
Paul was just I don't know. I mean, and to lose 2 years in a row in second place to a 5-4 vote, it's just poetic to me. Like it's beautiful. Like it's the universe being kind to everyone but Paul, I guess. But
well, I just hope for future seasons they don't bring anyone back. I don't want Yvette's. I like all new people that way.
I don't mind vets. I would prefer it to be an all-vet season if they do it, which I don't know if Big Brother has ever done except for All-Stars, because then it's more of a level playing field.
Yeah.
But yeah, whole one-vet, four-vets thing, it definitely tilts the game, and most people are way too afraid to get them out for more than half the game and then watch vet egos explode all over the place, and it's just annoying.
Well, I hope Celebrity Big Brother gets a lot of good people. Like, I want really Jaleel White. Jaleel White would be cool.
Oh, man. There's so many people that I can think of that would be super fun to watch play Big Brother. I just hope it's not like a Dancing with the Stars type thing. Like, I hope they get some actual celebrities.
Yeah, we'll see.
Like, Rick Perry, I'm sorry. It does not count. Ever.
Yeah. Well, Frankie Muniz is on Dancing with the Stars, so they can't get him. He was on an interview with Conan, and he said he keeps in touch with Bryan Cranston. Like, you know, they're really good friends, and he said Bryan Cranston checks in on him, like, you know, once a month just to see how he's doing, if he needs anything, all that stuff. And he's like, 5 years ago, I remember having dinner with him, and he said, I'm proud of whatever you do, I support whatever you do, but all I ask is that you never go on Dancing with the Stars. Now he is on it. He's like, I haven't talked to him about it yet, but I'm sure I'm going to be getting a call soon.
Nice.
That's pretty funny. So,
Frankie Muniz has a name I've not heard for a long time.
Yep. Well, now you heard it here.
Exclusive Brief Nerdy podcast. We say the name Frankie Muniz.
This is I've not felt since.
All right. Was that it for you, Trent?
Yeah, for the most part. The Teen Wolf finale was last night, so I'm excited to watch that after the podcast, and then that'll be done. And then I think I might, because I don't really know of a lot of other network shows that I like, really feel a drive to catch up on, so I think I might go back into House of Cards and catch up on that.
Yeah, well, there you go.
Star Trek Discovery premiered last night, so I watched that, and we're going to talk about that here in a little bit, so I'm really excited about that.
Well, should we talk about how freaking good the Orville was?
Yeah, we can do that too. The Orville was incredible. Like, way deeper and more serious than I thought it would even, like, remotely approach.
Right? Like this week's episode had such a good balance of funny. You know, like, you were almost rolling out of your chair at one point. again, literally, almost.
Literally, almost.
But the, like, you and I were just, like, totally somber watching it. Like, they were hitting on some heavy, heavy themes.
Yeah, like, I never thought that they could strike such a balance between serious and comedy. And the comedy was even better this week than in previous weeks. I am blown away by how much I'm liking the show.
I mean, I could say this now as my opinion, but they've out Star Trek Star Trek.
Oh wow!
So far, yeah.
So
it definitely feels like a love letter to Star Trek.
100%. It's not a parody. Way. It's 100% love letter.
Yeah, it's fantastic. If you haven't seen it, you should give it a try.
Yeah, I gotta give it a shot, because I know you guys recommended it last week, but then this week I didn't hear any spoilers or anything about it, but just people on Twitter were going crazy saying, like, I can't believe I like this show.
Yeah.
I can't believe, like, how it balances comedy and still has, like, a ton of heart. So.
Yeah. Especially this week, like, the story, like, broke my heart. Like, it was so good.
Wow.
I can't even, yeah. And you have to go see it.
It's very good.
What do you guys been watching?
So I just kind of wanted to comment that Rick and Morty's been going on. It's almost, the season's about to wrap up, but it's just been a consistently good season. Like, every single episode has been a hit in my eyes. So just going to give a shout out to that. And Rick and Morty's awesome, but won't go too much into it. Randomly saw Despicable Me 3 this week. It was very blah. Yeah. Like, I really enjoyed the first one, you know, I'll admit that, but, like, I don't know, this franchise needs to be done, but it won't be for a long time, since the Minions, like, print money for Illusion.
Yeah, the Minions are too profitable.
So, but I think this might be the last in that series that I watch, because I'm kind of done. I did skip the Minions movie, but I was like, oh, I'll watch Despicable Me 3, because it was, you know, I loved the first one and thought the second one was fine.
The villain's Trey Parker, too, isn't it?
Yep.
Yes.
It's funny. I couldn't, like, unhear him the entire time. He's like every voice on South Park, so. But he was fun. So, yeah, he was fine. Then I also saw Kingsman 2. We could transition this into you, what you've seen, TJ, because I know we both saw it. But
yeah,
we won't go into any spoiler territory, but I want to say it was still a very, very good movie. You know, I wouldn't say it's impossible, but it didn't reach the heights of the first one. But I think just because the first one was just such a pleasant surprise, and, you know, the surprise in and of itself, but then, like, surprises like the church scene in the first one, you know, they couldn't really quite hit us over the head with that like they did in the original. And even though the villain was great, I still didn't think she could stand up to Samuel Jackson's villain in the first one.
Yeah.
So, but other than that, you know, it was still great. Had a lot of heart, had a lot of comedy, a lot of great action. So I would still recommend it to anyone who's a fan of the first one.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, me too. Because I know Matthew Vaughn, the director, he also directed Kick-Ass 1 and 2. And Kick-Ass, like, those movies are still some of my favorite superhero movies, if not, like, my favorite.
I love Kick-Ass.
Oh, it's so good. And Kick-Ass 2, like, I love it. I don't love it as much as the first one, but I love it for what it is. And Kingsman 2, it's like the exact same thing, where the first movie just does such a good job, like, setting up that world and that universe, and then the second movie, it's like, all right, we established everything, now we can just, like, go crazy with it. And so both of those series, like, they do that. So, yeah, I love it. I'm really happy with it. I don't like it as much as the first one, but yeah, it's a really good time.
Again, no spoilers, but I'm really surprised what they decided to do with certain characters. They went places I didn't expect them to go.
Yeah, and that's one thing, too. Like, you absolutely have to see the first one in order to see this, but I was really surprised at how much they tied it back to the first one and how many characters they brought back.
Yeah.
And there is a famous musician. I won't say who it is, but he plays a fairly decent role in this movie, and it's just bonkers.
Yeah, when Yoshi first appears, I thought it would just be like a cameo, but then they kept showing up again and kind of becoming a character in the movie, so I was like, oh, All right.
Yeah, and supposedly this person, I read, they wanted this person to be in the first one, and the person like heard about it, and they're like, no, I don't want to do that. Then they saw the movie, and they're like, oh my gosh, I should have been in this. So that's why they came back for the second one.
That's awesome.
Yeah, but no, it's a good time. Just a fun movie. Just, you know, it's fun, and it's like silly without being dumb. You know, it's got a lot of smart stuff to it. So yeah, I'm really mad that I wasn't
feeling great this weekend because I kind of want to just want to go buy a ticket right now and go see it as soon as the podcast is over.
Yeah, it's a good time. That's a buy. I don't buy a ton of movies anymore, but I'll definitely buy that.
Nice.
I'd buy that for a dollar.
I would definitely buy it for a dollar. I'd buy a lot of things for a dollar. I'd buy 50 pieces of penny candy for a dollar.
All right, well, how was Lego?
Lego was good. I don't want to start off like negative, but I'll just say of the three Lego movies, it's my least favorite, but I still really, really enjoyed it. It starts off a little rough. Of the three movies, it's the first one where the first maybe like 10, 15 minutes, you're kind of thinking like, man, did they really make this one just for kids? Like, it didn't really feel like that smart, and it just kind of played like almost like a Power Rangers episode, which I know you'll probably like that. But yeah, just like there's a lot of action at the beginning, not really a lot of like good like dialogue and stuff like that. So it doesn't really set up the movie properly. But once the movie gets going and once the whole like story really kicks in, it's all about the main guy, Lloyd, and his dad, Garmadon, who's also like the main villain. Just their relationship or like non-existent relationship that they've had over the years. And once they get going with that, it's just, there's some really, really good like laugh out loud parts. And this villain, Garmadon, I think he's the best villain out of all the three Lego movies. He really makes this movie something special. Without him, I think the movie would have just been okay, but he kind of pushes it over the top.
That's cool. Yeah. It's kind of funny you should mention that the beginning kind of felt like that, because that's actually how I thought about the Lego movie. Just that very, very first scene with, oh man, I'm blanking on the names.
Emmett?
No, the before that, like when it's just Lord Business and he's going and getting the Craggle, I think.
Oh, okay, yeah. Yeah, so like the flashback sequence, kind of.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I can't remember Morgan Freeman's name. For some reason.
That scene with Morgan Freeman and Will Ferrell at the beginning, it was like a little bit too like over the top, and like the dialogue was said like way too quickly for some reason. Mm-hmm. Like they're trying to like just barf out a ton of exposition, and it seemed really unnatural. So like that first scene, I was like, even when I was watching it, but then Everything Is Awesome started, and then life was great.
Well, one thing I will say, and I don't consider this a spoiler, but I feel like I should mention it. There are live action parts, but they don't tie into the like Lego movie at all. So like none of those characters return or anything like that. So it kind of does that like the first Lego movie did, where there are live action parts. But I feel like it didn't really add anything to the movie. Like if you took the live action parts out, the rest of the movie would have been fine. Like it almost felt like they tried to force it in just to kind of like tug at the heartstrings and stuff.
Yeah.
But I don't feel like it really tied in with the rest of the movie very well.
It just didn't land, is that what it sounds like?
Yeah. Yep.
I gotcha. So,
like you could seriously take it out of the movie and the movie wouldn't be any different. Like the full story. Like the live action part doesn't really have anything to do with the rest of the movie. Whereas in the first Lego movie, that live action part plays a very integral role in the whole story. It explains like everything. Didn't explain anything at all. So yeah, but no, I mean if you like the Lego movies, go see it. Also another just fun movie. And you know, a lot of witty dialogue and stuff, and just I'm telling you, Justin Theroux as Garmadon, it's just some of his lines are they will be quoted for many years to come.
We could always use more fun movies.
Yeah. So yeah. And then besides movies, the only show I've been watching is Fuller House. The third season is on Netflix. It's only 9 episodes, and they're like 25 minutes. All the other two seasons were 13, so I don't know what happened with that. But I feel like that's kind of a good thing. Yeah, it's on the third season.
That's exactly what I said, because I watched the first season, and I enjoyed it. And I was like, cool, I can't wait for more to come out. But I guess I never, ever got the memo that season two came out. And now people are already talking about season three. And I'm like, okay, cool. I guess
yeah,
I
am. For me, it was kind of like, hey, that show looks interesting. I'll add it to my list. And then I was like, wait, season three? I have three seasons I haven't seen.
Yeah, I mean, they've released a new season every September. And I mean, it's a show that it's not a bad show, but I mean, if you're a big Full House fan, like, I mean, obviously, like, watch it. But yeah, I mean, there are some moments, though, that do genuinely make me laugh out loud. But I mean, overall, like, it's just a hokey, cheesy show. But it feels like this season is really playing more towards, like, adult humor instead of kids. Like, I don't know if they did their research and were like, okay, kids don't really watch the show. It's just the people that were kids when they watched Full House all grown up now. So I don't know if maybe that's why they're kind of going in that direction. But yeah, it's just, it's a shut off your brain show, and there's nothing wrong with that.
What's your 10-second review of season two for me, since I haven't got that far yet?
I'm going to be completely honest with you. I could barely tell you anything about season two. I remember watching it. Like, I watched the whole thing with my wife, and I remember not hating it. And I, you know, I liked it, but
this is a TV show.
Anything about it? Exactly. This is a TV show.
Yeah. Oh, cool. I'll have to get on that.
Because every time when you're watching it, even if you're bored, every time an old character or something shows up from Full House, you know, you're like, okay, it made this episode worth it.
Yeah.
So that's all.
Have they had the youngest on yet?
Michelle?
Yeah.
No, they still have not been able to get either of them to come back.
That's actually how I found out about season three, because it was an article that said that, like, the creators of the show said, oh, we've asked her enough, we are going to stop asking at this point, because they are just so adamant with saying no.
Yeah, because I think John Stamos is even the producer on the show, and he was really trying. Like, he still has a relationship with them, but yeah, they just don't want to do it.
So it was there that they're like, yeah, Netflix season three starts. So I'm like, we're Fuller House season three. I'm like, what, season three? So, but yeah, it was that article that caught my eye.
Yep, so.
I mean, no. I guess neither of them are really involved in acting much anymore, right? Don't they have, like, big fashion careers and stuff now?
Yeah.
So, I mean, it makes sense. It's too bad from a fan perspective.
Yeah, it is. I mean, even just a little cameo. It's like, I don't know why one of them can't do it.
Yeah, like a little 5-minute, like Suki in the Gilmore Girls revival.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, why? And it was great.
Even because they reference Michelle in the show, like, they talk about how she's doing, like, something in the fashion world, like, she lives in New York and stuff. So it's like, I don't know why they just can't, like, even FaceTime her or something. Like, just for one scene, that's it.
That would be funny.
So, I mean, come on, Harry came back for an episode. That's one thing that happened in season two. No, wait, you know what? Maybe that was season one. Yeah. Well, yeah, Stephanie's friend Harry, he was in like 5 episodes, I think, of the original show. Like, even he came back. So,
all right. Well, that's kind of it for what we've watched and played. I do have a little, though. I didn't watch it or I play it, but I finished reading/listening, since I did do the audiobook, the Star Wars novel Phasma.
Cool.
So I kind of want to just talk a little bit about that, and you guys can gauge me whether or not how far into spoilers I should get. But
book. You can spoil it all you want. No one's going to read it.
I would say that it's good. It suffers from a lot of things that other Star Wars books in the new canon have suffered from. One of them being is, like, the beginning gets super interesting, and then, like, they don't know what to do for the middle, so they kind of just spin their wheels, and then the end is super interesting again.
Hmm. When does this take place? After Force Awakens?
No.
Oh.
It kind of takes place two places. It's kind of two stories going on at the same time. One of them is shortly before Force Awakens. It's not really said when, but based on just dialogue, that seems to be pretty close to Force Awakens. I would say within a few months of being before it. But it's somebody telling the origin story of Phasma to another character, and then those chapters are flashbacks to 10 years before Force Awakens to give Phasma's origin story,
oh,
so to speak. So I'll kind of ask you guys how you feel about spoilers in this, but I'm not going to go into any story content. But would you mind if I shared kind of what I learned about Phasma and who she is as a person and as a character?
A little bit, just because that's really the only point that I think I'm going to get from reading the book.
Okay.
I don't know. I'm a little torn because I'm going to be so far behind that who knows. But
I won't go too much into it. But I will say that, you know, for me, it fully justifies her actions in Force Awakens as far as like taking down the shield while being pointed a gun at by, you know, FN-217.
Oh, wow.
So at least in my eyes anyways. And one of the things I love most about this novel is that, yeah, like I pretty much know everything I feel I need to know about her, you know, to see like where this character goes from here on out, you know. Like, I don't think there's anything they could tell me in a movie, you know, about our past that will be like, ooh, that's new or exciting or crazy or anything like that. So I feel like I know this character and her past extremely well. And so for now, I'm just really excited to see where they take her in the new trilogy.
Huh. So do you think there's anything that was in the book that could have been in The Force Awakens to kind of add to her character?
No.
Or no? Okay.
No, not at all. And they kind of explain why in the book as well. I'll say this, like, she doesn't want many people knowing her past.
Oh.
And so there's good reason why I don't think it will ever be brought up in the movies, except maybe just a small thing, you know?
Interesting.
That's interesting.
Just kind of a line she may throw out there. Like, if she's like, you know, I was born on this planet, you know, something like that. You know, like, not anything crazy, you know? As far as revealing, as far as our history, I would imagine. So if either of you want to talk about it with me one-on-one, that's fine. Or, you know, if anyone, one of our listeners wants to reach out, and you know, I'd be happy to give my more spoilerific thoughts there too. So, but in the long run, I would say it's one of the better Star Wars books. So it's definitely worth picking up. Again, just struggles a little bit in the middle, just doesn't know where they want to go. And so they kind of just spin their wheels for a good quarter to a third of the book. So, but other than that, but it's still important by the end. You know, you learn things that, you know, kind of as the revelations happen toward the end of the book, you're like, oh, okay, now I know why that needed to happen. But at the time, I was like, so bored. Oh. But yeah, overall good book. I recommend it.
Thanks. Cool.
So, all right, well, let's get on to news topics. Not really much to say here, but Halo 3 came out 10 years ago today.
Yeah, Halo. Oh my gosh! I read that as Halo came out 10 years ago today. And I don't know why my brain thought that made sense, but wow.
Halo 3, debatably the best Halo game. I don't know if it was the only one you really enjoyed, Trent.
I really liked Reach.
Okay, I thought you. Yeah, so
I thought Reach's story was really good. I don't know if gameplay, how the gameplay compares anymore, but
yeah.
Just the end of Reach. I didn't expect them to go there with it. And I just remember it being super powerful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's disappointing because Microsoft has celebrated the 10-year anniversary of Halo 1 and 2 by, you know, releasing a remastered version, or, you know, for Halo 2, they did the Master Chief Collection, which, you know, even though it was, the online was very, very buggy, you know, the campaigns were solid in it. At launch, you know, definitely a love letter to Halo 2 and the fans of the old Halo games. But unfortunately, they seem to do absolutely nothing for Halo 3's anniversary, which is sad to me. So
it's pretty sad.
Yeah. But anyway, don't have much to talk about. Just happy birthday, Halo 3. You're 10 years old. So did any of you catch any of the awesome Super Mario Odyssey preview footage?
I was watching bits and pieces, but it's only a month away at this point, so I'm trying to stay away. I feel like I've already watched too much.
Yeah, that's kind of how I feel as well.
I
feel
like I have enough, especially with the Nintendo Direct footage. That was definitely, like, if I didn't have enough before, I've definitely, like, I'm my hype level's maximum. I'm excited to play it. I just want to get in and see what it's like for myself.
I probably only watched a total of like 3 minutes of different footage, but just one thing that I noted, and I hope the final game is this, I don't know why it wouldn't be, but one of the videos was in 60 frames. And so I'm like, holy crap, is this game going to be in 60 frames? And so that made me all excited again.
Don't quote me on this, but I think it is. I'm pretty sure it is.
Yeah, I don't know why anyone would be capturing 60 FPS footage.
Yeah. You know, no, YouTube. I'm pretty sure it is.
So that is amazing. I love that.
Yep.
I'm a petty person like that. So
that's not petty. I think a game like that, it just runs so smooth. Yeah. Like, you know, a platformer like that. So yeah,
I'm just super excited.
Yeah, that's gonna be great. And just like with every other Switch game, just knowing that that game is gonna be portable, like,
I know, it's right? Just, like, I'll probably play it all portable, like I've been playing lately, just because I haven't set my TV up recently, and it's I haven't felt gypped by, or sorry, that's not a word I like to use. I haven't felt cheated by it at all.
Cheated by what exactly?
Well, like the handheld mode versus being on the TV. Like, I think the handheld, like, I've played everything on the handheld mode since I played Zelda, really. So,
oh, gotcha.
Phenomenal.
Well, see, and it's like, I know the Switch has been out for, what, like 6 months now? And I mean, I just know everyone had their qualms about it. Like, oh, okay, is it really going to, like, instantly go to the TV as soon as you dock it in there? Like, there has to be some sort of delay or something. But it really is just so easy to go back and forth between the two. Like, it's seamless. So, yeah. I love it. I love my Switch so much.
I have decided I am taking that day off of work, so woo-hoo! I can play Mario, possibly Wolfenstein, and watch some Stranger Things. So it's going to be a good day.
See if I can get that day off too.
All right, well, kind of in Star Wars news, probably should have segued in this from Phasma, but director Rian Johnson has announced that Star Wars The Last Jedi has completely wrapped. They're done.
He's done. I don't know where I saw it today, but I saw like the most duh headline of any headline I've ever seen, where it's like, Star Wars The Last Jedi trailer likely coming soon. And I'm like, no, you don't say. I was like, if a robot didn't write that, I'm going to be very, very upset.
I think if a robot wrote that, I'd be upset.
Robots. Just kidding, robots. Okay. This is from the future. We love you. And you are our masters.
Yeah, well, I can't wait.
One thing I saw in the right comments on Reddit that maybe might be a good, really good thing about this, you know, I don't think there's anything wrong with this, but they said that typically John Williams likes to have like a completed either scene to work with when he's developing a score. You know, maybe not all the special effects done, but, you know, for the majority done, so he can really get a vision of what is on film and how to put music to that. So people say, like, having the movie done so early, and we don't know if John Williams' score is counted in that post-production announcement, but having it done so early regardless gives him, you know, a lot of time to come up with a great score.
Oh,
yeah, well. So did he say that production has wrapped, or that the movie itself, for like post-production, everything is done?
He said post-production has wrapped, is the exact words. So,
well, it's got to include the music and the editing, right?
So if that's the case, though, like, you know, maybe John Williams did have a lot of time already.
True. You know, if
they're at the point where, like, yep, we're done, we're confident enough that we're not going to go back and either record more scenes or do some more tweaking and editing, you know.
True.
Well, speaking of score, this has made me think of this really quick. Trent, you sent me a video like almost a week ago, but I forgot to tell you that I watched it and talked about it. It talks about Dunkirk, and it's called The Sound Illusion That Makes Dunkirk So Intense.
Oh, yeah.
So just like Google that. It's only like 4 minutes long, but it talks about the person that scored Dunkirk and a lot of Christopher Nolan's movies, maybe even all of his movies, and just this effect that he uses and this kind of like trick that he uses in the music to kind of like ramp up tension without ever reaching like that peak, like where you can't go any further. And I was like, man, this is really, really neat. And I never really noticed that. And now once you hear it and you like see it explained and stuff, like it's really neat. So definitely Google that if you're interested in that kind of stuff. Thank you for showing me that.
No, no problem. Do we want to kind of explain a little bit about what it is in case people don't go look for that article or video?
If you want, but I don't know. I think people should just watch it.
Yeah, so it's like you said, it's basically, I'm not going to give it all away, but it's kind of like it's a sensory illusion for sound that it makes you think you're hearing something that's not actually there, and how it happens and how it works is actually really, really cool.
Yeah. And it's funny because one of the examples they use from gaming that really made me happy were the never-ending staircase from Mario 64.
I know, I was so surprised by that. I had no idea.
Because I do remember, like, Ryan, you know the part we're talking about, right? Where when you don't have enough stars to reach, yep, like, Bowser at the top, the staircase just keeps... Yeah, and I remember doing that, and I would stand... I'm like, I'm going to keep running, because, like, I bet if you run long enough, like, it's got to end.
Everybody does that. It's so funny.
Yeah. And yeah, so that was really the first example of this method that I, you know, ever experienced, but I just didn't realize that that was the trick that they used. And I'm like, oh my gosh, that's so cool, because that's such a memorable part of Mario 64.
Awesome.
So, yeah, look it up. And the room was silent.
You look it up. No. So, speaking of Star Trek, let's talk about Star Trek.
Yeah, Star Trek.
So, Star Trek came out this Sunday. They aired the first episode on CBS, but then the second episode was exclusive to the CBS All Access.
Is that really how they did it? They did a two-episode premiere and only one of them was on TV?
Yep.
Ouch.
Well, did you see that?
Why don't I both watch them both online? But I had no idea that that's what they did. Because the first episode ends on a bit of a cliffhanger.
Yep.
Well, did you see there's that show Ghosted coming to Fox, and I don't think it premieres until next week, but, like, I think this past week they were live streaming it on Twitter. Like, there were set times and you could only watch the episode on Twitter. Huh.
That's interesting.
Yeah, that was a new thing they're trying out, so.
Yeah, the show Incorporated, I think, did their pilot on YouTube. Like, you could just log in and watch it. And that was pretty cool. I wish they would do
what about,
more like that.
What about the Inhumans, where you could see the first two episodes in IMAX and nobody went?
Yeah, you pay $15 to see a really, really crappy.
Did that happen already?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, did we talk about it?
Nobody saw it.
No, I didn't even watch the show.
We talked about how bad it was.
I don't think anyone's seen the show yet.
I literally had it so off my radar that I had no idea the IMAX thing happened already, because I was waiting to, like, see a bunch of news stories just lambasting how terrible the, you know, turnout was. But
it seems like it's that bad to where people don't even want to, like, even bother to talk about it. I mean, yeah. I don't know. I haven't seen it, so I guess I shouldn't judge. But
here we
I
go.
Don't know.
I just did a Google search and we got another wonderful headline from CinemaBlend.com. Marvel's Inhumans might be canceled. Get the details. I was like, I'm pretty sure it's probably more than might at this point.
I would love to be. Now I kind of regret not seeing it at the theater, because I could say, like, I saw a canceled TV show at the movie theater.
Too bad your movie pass wouldn't work since it was IMAX only.
That day.
Yeah, which, let me mention that. I used my movie pass for the two movies I saw. Well, the three movies. But Lego Movie and Kingsman. And it worked flawlessly. It was awesome.
Nice.
At the kiosk.
At the kiosk, yes. And thank you, Kelly Burns. I went to grade school with her. And I have a poster that she gave me. It is Darth Maul, signed by Ray Park. And she gave that to me because, like, I think her or her dad went to the premiere. So I got that poster, and I still have it. So
that's awesome.
Thank you, Kelly. And I know she listens to the show. So, yeah, thank you. She's her dad, I don't know exactly what he does. Maybe she'll comment if she listens to this. But he's been in, like, the movie business, like, obviously since we were in grade school. So I don't know exactly what he does. But, yeah, I remember she would have the coolest Halloween parties every year, like, deck out her basement, like, go all out. And she would always have these awesome movie posters. Like, that's the first place I saw the Revenge of the Jedi poster, like, in person, because she had one.
That's
so
awesome. Kelly, you're awesome.
Yes, thank you, Kelly. But But
Star Trek.
I think I liked it more than you did.
I think so.
Not really a surprise for either of us. Because I tend to have a lower bar than you do. And I'm just so happy that it's on TV and that it wasn't terrible. Like, that's all I needed it to be, because a lot of shows have bad pilots and bad first seasons,
yeah,
and then go on to be really, really great. And I hope this gets the chance. I mean, and it wasn't even bad, I wouldn't say.
Definitely not.
It was good-ish. I mean, good, not great. So, I mean, I didn't regret watching it at all, and I'm really excited to see where it goes. So, and I didn't even mind the Klingons, but holy crap, did they speak a lot.
Yeah, I was telling Trent while we were watching it together, and I was like, well, you kind of have to think, like, there's probably a lot of people who became Star Trek fans when the JJ universe started. And so this is the first Star Trek TV show since then. And they jump in, and there's probably, out of the hour 30 minute finale premiere, like, there's probably 30 straight minutes of just Klingons talking to each other in Klingon.
Yeah. It's a lot of Klingon. Even for me, it was a lot of Klingon.
I was like, this is pretty heavy. Like, get ready for Star Trek. Lots of subtitles. But
I mean, the action was cool. The setup is. I mean, the space battles I thought were fantastic.
Yeah, they did a good job with that.
The video, like the special effects for like the way space looks and everything, is just breathtaking. So that's fun. And I mean, it has some interesting moral quandaries.
My biggest problem is probably the main character. Same. Which is a bad sign.
Yeah, I don't dislike her yet, but I'm not rooting for her either.
We'll see. I wanted to give her a chance, but I kind of came predisposed more towards the negative side because of her character on Walking Dead.
That sucks. I haven't seen that at all. So.
And so, like, I was already like, okay. But then, like, her actions in the episode, I'm like, and you want us to be rooting for you? Because, like, not only were they, like, almost pretty much completely wrong decisions to make, by all accounts, mostly, you know, it seemed completely out of character for a Star Trek character.
Yeah.
Or it seemed like something it would, like, the J.J. Abrams Kirk would do. But even, it was probably too much for him, even, I would say. Too far for him. So that kind of took me out of it a bit. And then this is the main character and we're expected to root for her, you know, going forward. So didn't get started strongly. So
yeah, a lot of it's really going to have to come down to what they do like with the beginning of this next episode and like the direction she goes in. A lot of that's going to make a difference for me, I think.
So far, my favorite character is the Solarian-like alien.
Yeah, I like him a lot. I thought he was going to be the most annoying thing in the world, but he was really interesting and funny. And like, did you notice how tall he was?
Yeah, super tall.
Holy crap!
Especially when he sat in the captain's chair.
Yeah, so that stood up next to her
over his head.
It was so good. So yeah, he was cool. A lot of the like the random alien on the desert planet was really cool looking. Like I said, I don't want to get too into it for people who haven't seen it yet, but I would say that if you like Star Trek and you like sci-fi, it's enjoyable enough, and I really hope that it just continues to get better. So,
right now, Orville does Star Trek better.
Yeah, at the moment, Orville is out trekking Trek.
Someone gave a good...
for in visuals. I mean, Star Trek's never been like the best in visuals, but like the music and the special effects of Discovery are just phenomenal.
They're very good.
So
I will also say that people should stop blaming JJ for lens flares because they were all over the place.
It must have been this Kurtzman guy. Like, it's all his fault because he's in both. I think he did writing for the JJ Star Trek too.
Yep.
But yeah, Ryan, the whole time, like, I was he's like, lens flare, lens flare. Lens flare, lens flare. I was like, stop.
So many lens flares.
Yeah, they're definitely aiming for that style of, you know, like futuristic, shiny space. It's fine. I don't hate it.
One thing I think the show has a lot of potential for that Orville won't do is that it's very obvious that Orville is kind of doing a freak of the week, you know, an episode by episode, you know,
yes,
sort of style, like the old Star Trek. But with modern television going into more serialized formats, like, will this be the first Star Trek show where it's, you know, just a single story branched across the season in a serialized format like other shows, modern shows? So no. I think that could be something.
It will not be, because it's already happened. You just haven't seen it yet.
All right. So I think that would have given Star Trek something fresh and something to make it stand out from Orville, but if not, I don't know.
I mean, they may do that, and I hope they do. I'm just saying that there are seasons of Star Trek that you haven't seen yet that also have a more serialized, less freak of the week.
Oh, yes. Yeah. So I do remember them saying that DS9 and the end of Voyager, or not the end of Voyager, yeah, I did hear that too. But at least that's something that Star Trek Discovery can do to differentiate itself.
Yeah, I agree. And I hope they do. And based on the preview for like this season on Discovery, blah, 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 it looks like they may be going in that direction. So I'm kind of hopeful for it.
We shall see.
DJ is super excited.
Huh? What? Huh? What? No, I heard the show's really good. So.
He's singing the Star Trek song.
Do you have any interest in watching Discovery? Do you think you'll get into it at all?
I don't know, because my only really experience with Star Trek are the reboots, like the J.J. Abrams one, and then the sequels. And yeah, I really enjoyed them, but I was never really into Star Trek before that. But I have nothing against it, though. Yeah, and I've been hearing nothing but great things about the show. I heard Star Trek fans and non-fans are really happy with it so far. So maybe I'll give it a whirl.
There you go. Yeah, I heard a rumor that, and I'm actually going to check on this right now while I say it, so we'll see if it's actually real or not. That a lot of CBS stuff is coming back to Hulu, which I thought was strange. I think maybe my friend is misinformed. Just kidding. Ignoring what I just said.
Ignored. All right. So most of you know that a video game strike has been going on for quite a while now. It's been over a year, I believe, at this point. But looks like video game companies are kind of starting to reach a tentative agreement to end the strike, which is a good thing. We haven't seen a lot of the effects of it yet because, you know, video game production is a long time. And, you know, sometimes voice acting can be done really, really early. So we may not notice until, you know, after the strike is already resolved. But I do know that the new Life is Strange game didn't have the main character in that game didn't have the same actress who voiced her in the original game, because
I think Ashley Birch, I think, is the actress's name.
Yeah, because she's on the strike, and so she couldn't come back to play her character again. And this is more of an indie-ish game, even though it's Square Enix. So they were able to churn that around a little bit faster during the strike. And so unfortunately we won't have her in this game, but it's good to know that, the end is hopefully close.
Yeah. And, there's, a really good documentary about voice acting in both cartoons and video games. And I forget what it's called now, but I'm sure you can Google that and you'll get it.
I think it's I Know That Voice.
That sounds familiar. But so it really goes to show you like how much time and energy and work goes into being a voice actor, and kind of like what their day is like. And so I think having them with better representation under like their union and everything, I think is going to be good for the genre going forward.
I agree with most of their points that they want, like knowing what they're working on and, you know, being able to be paid extra for strenuous work or other things like that that can damage their voice. Right. I'm not sure about residuals for them. I feel very, very few people buy a video game for the voice actor. So I think them getting a percentage of profits is a disservice to the developers, who typically don't even get that kind of deal.
True, but I mean, I wouldn't know Jennifer Hale without Mass Effect.
And so yeah, but
I consider her to be a core part of my experience for that game.
Totally. But, like, you don't hear, like, oh, this new game has Jennifer Hale in it, and so I'm going to go buy that game because of her, like, almost exclusively.
Well, they don't market it that way, but I was really excited to hear that she was doing, like, a voice in one of the classes for Star Wars The Old Republic, for example.
Yeah, but, like, an actor for a movie, you know, sells a movie. You know, you see, oh, well, Ryan Reynolds and Samuel Jackson are in this new movie. You know, I almost kind of don't care about the concept, but those seem like a fun pair for this movie. That's not quite the same for video game voice actors.
Yeah, it can. I mean, Mother's an example of that not working out. But I see what you're saying.
And I would just, not to say they don't deserve it, I'm just saying that developers, I think, deserve it more. And so we shouldn't start talking about giving voice actors, you know, percent portion of the game's profits before, you know, trickling that down first to the lower level developers. But that's my opinion.
That's cool.
Controversial one at that, right? Just lost half our viewers.
Yep.
Including TJ. Four. He left.
I'm out.
He's just falling asleep. He's just like, wake me up when we're done.
This is the ghost of TJ.
Anything to say about that, TJ, or pretty much?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely see why, you know, they want more, like, more time in the spotlight and everything. And, I mean, yeah, voice acting is hard. You know, it's not just going into a booth and then reading some lines. I mean, there really is a lot more to it. And, yeah, I don't know. I guess, like you said with Life is Strange, like, that really is disappointing that she's not the voice, because I'm still going to play that game. Regardless, but I think, like, with what Trent's saying, it's like Ashley Birch was her voice. So now playing that, I'm going to be like, well, I know this is legit. It's an actual sequel made by all the same people, but it's not her. So yeah. It is going to take away from it a little bit. So, yeah, they definitely play an integral part in the gaming. But you're right, though, Ryan. Like, there aren't many games that people buy strictly for, you know, the voice acting.
So... yeah.
Yeah, the closest thing I can think of would be like when crap. It wasn't the game with Ellie, like The Last of Us, that has Ellie.
Yeah.
Where she looks like that actress, but they supposedly didn't do it on purpose.
Oh yeah, it looks like Ellen Page.
Ellen Page. And then there was the game that actually was supposed to be Ellen Page's voice.
Beyond Two Souls. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's the only one I can think of where they like legit pushed that as, you know, but even then it was a movie star and not a voice actor per se.
Well, I guess the one example I could think of with voice acting that I think did help sell the games was Lego Dimensions, like the first season. Oh, yeah. I mean, bringing back Michael J. Fox as Marty McFly is something that I don't think anyone would have ever thought they'd get to see or hear. And then Christopher Lloyd is Doc Brown. Like, they brought him back. They brought a lot of those, like, actual actors back. But even then, those are actors, not just voice actors. Yeah. So you can argue that that's why people are more excited about that.
I even have an argument to your point, is that the Arkham games, you know, it was a selling point to me to have Mark Hamill and... why am I blanking on his name? He's my favorite Batman. The animated Batman voice.
Oh, Gilbert Gottfried.
Yep, Gilbert Gottfried.
There you go. He is the best Batman.
Yes, Gilbert Gottfried is the best Batman. You're thinking of
Kevin Conroy. Yeah, that's it. Why did I blink on that? I freaking love Kevin Conroy. I've met him before. Yeah, but the fact that Kevin Conroy and Mark Hamill were doing the voices in the Arkham games was a selling point for me. So
yeah. Because, how amazing was it? I think that was Arkham City? That you can have the Batman the Animated Series skin.
Yeah.
Just to have that and Kevin Conroy.
Yep.
Oh, man.
That's pretty cool.
I was like, why can't the whole game just look like this? That's all I want. So.
All right. Well, another game designer, kind of just behind the scenes gaming talk, another game designer says that developers would be more candid if gamer culture wasn't so toxic.
Oh, I don't like most gamers. I'll just be flat out honest.
Yeah, you all suck.
It's a very I'm being serious.
I'm being serious too.
It's a very annoying community. Like, I'll go out and say it too.
They're the other half of our listeners.
Thanks to Kelly for being our one and only listener at this point.
Yeah, no, it's just
the gaming community now is just so different because now than it used to be, because gaming is so mainstream now. Like, remember the days where you wouldn't just openly talk about gaming with, like, everyone? Yeah. Like, you would just have your gaming friends, and it's like, that's where you talked about that stuff. But now, gaming is just so, like, widely accepted, you know, yeah. ever since, it seems like, the Wii. You know, no one's afraid to say, like, oh, yeah, I play video games and stuff, but just the community that it's turned into, it's just... Gamers feel very entitled, and I totally see what they're talking about in this article, where developers are basically saying they don't want to talk about, like, the process of creating games before they're out, because they just get nothing but, like, awful feedback from people that don't know how game design actually works.
And I don't blame them, 100%.
Yeah, and I have a family member that is a game designer, and he talks about that all the time, so I know exactly what he's talking about. So many people think, like, oh, why can't you just port it to this? Don't you just, like, drag and drop it to this console? Like, that's all you do. There's no work involved. And it's like, well, no, it doesn't really work that way.
Yeah. Well, it's the thing that I've always noticed, especially when I was an active World of Warcraft player, is that the community would always be, like, super, super vocal about, like, this class needs this, and this class needs this, and we should be able to do this. And, like, Ghostcrawler at the time would make, like, his whole job was community management. And he would come out and talk to the players and be like, look, you think you want this, but it would actually break the game. And you, so, like, we're not going to give it to you. And I promise it'll be okay. Like, it just felt like he was, like, giving group therapy to a bunch of maniacs. Like, I don't know. The whole thing drives me a little bit crazy, especially, like, when people are upset about a game they haven't played yet.
Yeah.
Like, it drives me crazy. Every single post for Battlefront 2 that I've seen, because it's all over my feed lately, I open up the comments just for giggles, and one of the top five will be someone ranting about how they know this game is going to be terrible. And I was like, well, could you let me know what the lottery numbers are going to be next month? Because I would really like to know, like, your future site and, like, how perfect it is.
Yeah.
Like, I'm so tired of people assuming that they just, like, oh, this game is going to be awful. It's going to be the worst thing ever. It's like, why don't you wait until it at least has some reviews or something?
It all comes back to entitlement, that sense of entitlement. You know, and then when people complain about, like, game prices, like, don't get me wrong. Sometimes, you know, I play a game and I'm like, I'd feel better about this game if it was, you know, this price, or this game's a little too pricey for what you get. But yeah. I mean, you know, the whole $60 price point that people complain about, it's like, I feel like a lot of people forget that games used to be a lot more expensive. Games are actually cheaper now than they used to be. I mean, N64 games, like, I might have said it on the show before, I think I paid $89.99 for South Park 64 when that came out. And it's like, that's just because how it was. Like, you know, the developers would say, okay, this cart costs this much to produce. We need to make a profit, so our game's not going to be 50 or 60. It's going to be 90 or 80.
Yeah.
So the original Dragon Warrior 3, when I got it for my birthday, I remember seeing the price tag in the Toys R Us that we were in, and it was like $79. You know, that was an original NES game.
I remember I saved it for months so I could buy Mega Man 6 on the NES, and it was like $80.
And that's the thing, you know, the Switch is getting a lot of that flack too. People call it the Switch tax, where some of these games are, you know, more expensive for the physical copy on Switch compared to, like, other consoles, like L.A. Noire, that remake, or, like, the remaster, whatever you want to call it, is going to be $40 on PS4 and Xbox and $50 on Switch. But that's because the development cost of that little cart, and having a cart that's big enough to hold the whole game, it costs more than a disc.
Yep. That's why, I mean, this is a different topic, but that's why I'm pushing for all digital forever. But I know that I'm not in total agreement with everybody on that subject, so...
Yeah. Well, I mean, no, it's a fair argument, though. I mean, no one has the right to really say you're right or wrong. But yes, you do have the right to say if you're right or wrong.
Well, no, it's just really interesting. Like, the whole, like, digital versus print, for example, for books. There's a new the third book of the Stormlight Archives by Brandon Sanderson is coming out in November, and it's a big, thick hardback like epic fantasy novel. It's over 1,000 pages long. You know, so it's one of those big, like, Robert Jordan style, you know, epic fantasy novels. And the hardback is probably around $30-$40, I imagine. or whatever the hardback books cost these days. But it's one of the first times that because of like the subscription cost of Audible, and the Audible gives you a credit for towards an audiobook, the audiobook is going to be cheaper than the print book for the first time in like, it's super rare for this to happen.
Oh, wow.
It's going to be cheaper than the Kindle version because the Kindle of the hardback book is also expensive because it's the Kindle version of a hardback book, which I think is stupid.
Huh.
But, yeah, so it's an example of those things that it's just like it's a weird, like all of our, like, you know, markets are still transitioning and figuring out what it means to have digital products. So it's interesting.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, I feel like we've gotten a little bit off track of like the main topic, but I think when it all comes down to it, game design's very hard. Yes. It's not easy, and I feel like a lot of gamers that don't have any insight to development, you know, they take that for granted and they just think they know, you know, what's easy and what's not. But that's where it's a double-edged sword, because these developers say they don't want to talk about game development because gamers don't understand, but then you can argue that maybe gamers don't understand because they don't hear about the development.
True.
So, I don't know.
And I think, I don't know if the toxicity is bred strictly from like ignorance, or if it's just kind of part of me is like it's a bunch of nerds, and I use that term to apply to myself, who used to find kind of like a social escape in this once not accepted form of media. And now you have all these extra people coming in. Like, I wonder if the community in general is just kind of dealing with feeling super defensive of like what's quote unquote theirs. And what do you guys think about that?
That, I think, just, you know, there's a lot of younger gamers, and them having an anonymous voice on the internet, you know, contributes a lot to it.
I think you hit the nail on the head. I mean, not only the age thing, but just the anonymity. Anamina.
I thought about saying that word by anemone. Avoided it. I wouldn't have to.
The Finding Nemo.
Anonymity.
Yeah, of the internet is just, yeah, people say whatever they want online because they can hide behind the screen.
Yeah.
Couple that with kids, but it's not all kids, but yeah, you're going to get bad, bad results.
Those dang kids.
So, yeah.
Don't be so toxic. Be better.
That's right.
And they give you clones.
And I get that we're kind of ranting about, you know, negativity in kind of a semi-negative way, but one of the reasons that Ryan and I started this podcast and that we talked about one of our original aims was to try to just, you know, be positive and talk about things that we love. And I think that, like, I would love to see the gaming community just take a breath and just relax and realize how good we have it right now. I mean, there's always going to be problems. There's things to worry about, like, are AAA games feasible going forward? Are mobile games going to ruin everything? Like, there's things to worry about, but I feel like we shoot ourselves in the foot so much with just how at each other's throats we can be, and it makes me sad.
Yeah. But it's not even just in the video game community. I mean, it's even in like the technology world. I mean, look at the, Apple versus, you know, Android, like how heated people get, but it's also in sports. I mean, like people take sports so seriously. I mean, it's everywhere you go.
Yeah. It's funny. So, like, I don't know. It's weird. Like my brother and I can argue about like sports with other members of the family that live in like a different city or something, but I've never felt like, as like angry or belittled after talking about sports the way that I do sometimes when people talk about video games.
Yeah, I couldn't understand that.
And I wonder if it's just because it's a more mature, and I don't mean like age-wise, but just like the fact that it's been around longer. And so like, oh yeah, we, you know, blah, 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 go Chiefs. Like, your team sucks, but like, just kidding. Let's go have a beer. But I don't know. Maybe we'll get there.
Maybe.
I doubt it.
Yeah, I doubt
negative.
It.
Negative.
Negative Nancy over here.
Yeah, it's true. Well, instead of talking about all these modern games and all of this gaming community and negativity, let's go back in time to the 90s and talk about the NES Classic as it comes out this week.
Yes, it comes out Friday. The good news is a lot of stores or employees of stores are releasing their stock numbers, and they're actually looking really good. A lot better than I even expected. I think, you know, it might be too early to say it, but I think Nintendo might have learned their lesson with the horrors of finding an NES Classic.
Well, good on them.
Yeah, there's some Best Buys that are getting like well over 100 units the first day. Some have even like well over 200. Target stores, I think they're averaging like even smaller stores are getting like 40 units in. And this doesn't even count pre-orders, I don't think. So, yeah, it might not be too hard to get one. And it comes with two controllers, so you don't have to worry about hunting another one of those down. So I really hope this all goes well. I want people to have it, and I want people to be able to enjoy it.
Ditto. The Super Nintendo is debatably the best console of all time. So
it's a good one.
It was pretty good, I guess.
So, yes.
That's what I said, debatably.
So if you're doing this right, Nintendo, thank you for listening and understanding that people just want the cool stuff that you make.
Ditto.
Pretty much.
All right, well, we're getting close to wrapping up this week, but before we do, let's get into listener questions and topics. Da, da, da. Insert future theme song when we have a theme song and a special theme song for this moment.
Let's go ahead and do the second one we got first, just because I feel like it's going to be me kind of explaining what it is, and then the second one I think actually will have a discussion among all three of us, at least more so than the first one.
Okay.
So, the first one we're going to talk about came from Chris Gonzalez, and he said the topic he wanted to talk about was Pathfinder versus D&D. Do you guys know what either of those things are?
I know what D&D is.
Dungeons and Dragons.
Yes. Do you know like what it is?
Is it really Dungeons and Dragons?
Yes, it really is.
I was kind of being a... Okay, are you talking like the pen and paper Dungeons and Dragons?
Yeah.
Okay, then yes, I cool. know what that is.
Awesome. So D&D is a game that's been around for a long time. It's had many editions. One of the most popular of those editions was called 3.5. It was the remastered third edition. And it did a lot of things really, really well. People loved it. And then Wizards took the fourth edition and all the rules and how the game is played, basically, and made a ton of changes that a lot of people really didn't like. And so this kind of gave birth at the time, and it may have already kind of existed a little bit at the time, but this really fueled a lot of interest in this alternate gaming system called Pathfinder, which is basically a competitor now of D&D. And it's the thing that people liked about it is that it was a lot more like 3.5 on steroids. And so it did everything that they liked, and it has a ton of like character options and, you know, creature options and all this stuff. Whereas people have felt that D&D has been too narrow-minded in the past few years. So that's kind of like the Apple versus Google of the tabletop role-playing world.
Huh.
So a lot of people have strong opinions about one or the other. I've only ever played D&D. I've played a lot of other systems, but I've never actually played Pathfinder yet. I'm excited to play it because I have a lot of good memories of old D&D 3.5, but I just haven't had the opportunity yet. So there's kind of that discussion in a nutshell. So at the moment, I would choose D&D, but just because I've actually played it. The things that I've heard about Pathfinder are really exciting. Like, just the number of different class options is just dizzying. Like, there's like 30 or 40 of them, I think, as opposed to D&D is like 12. So... yeah,
gotcha.
That's
well, cool. I didn't know that. That was interesting.
The more you know.
When did Pathfinder come out for the first time?
That is a really good question. What were you going to ask, CJ?
I was going to say, I don't even want to ask it now because it's stupid.
No,
I was going to say, what's the difference between D&D and Triple D? Diners, Drive-ins, and Dives.
I don't know.
Fiatty. He goes to restaurants and he eats a ton of food. And he wears sunglasses on the back of his head.
All right, well, for
when I used to work at Best Buy, he came in. When I used to work at Best Buy, he came in there one day. I didn't want to help him. Yeah.
Here we go. Pathfinder role playing game is a fantasy role playing game that was first published in 2009 by Paizo Publishing. It extends and modifies the revised 3rd edition Dungeons and Dragons game. Yeah, that's pretty cool. And yeah, if you go to a game and hobby store that has like tabletop D&D books, you will find a ton of Pathfinder books. It has really just blown up and taken off a lot in the past few years. So it's pretty cool.
Very nice.
Awesome.
Our final question this week comes from friend of the podcast, Chris Louder. He says, Nintendo and remakes, good or bad? Some titles off the top of my head, like on the 3DS, Legend of Zelda, Ocarina of Time, Majora's Mask remakes, Metroid Samus Returns, and Super Mario Brothers Superstar Saga. So what do you guys think of the Nintendo remakes? Personally, I love them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for me, the originals are always going to be there. Like, as much as I hated the new Ghostbusters movie, it doesn't affect my love of the original Ghostbusters.
Yeah.
And so I feel with a remake, either it's going to be even better or it's going to be a really good alternative to the original, or it's not going to be as good. I still have the original. So
yeah,
there are a lot of things that, you know, that the 3DS Zelda remakes did amazing. And like I talked about, I think Metroid Samus Returns is better than the original almost in every way. You know, that was a game that really needed to be remade because, you know, it was a late 80s, early 90s Game Boy game, you know, that had some critical Metroid lore in it that people needed to see. And so now people have that in a more playable form.
Nice.
Yeah, well, even mentioned earlier in the show, Metroid Zero Mission, that's a remake of the original Metroid. And the original Metroid, I mean, it was great at the time, but I don't know how someone can honestly say that that's a really good game nowadays. Yeah, so Zero Mission... Yeah, it is. It's very difficult. And Zero Mission kind of took that story. I mean, I very loosely want to like loosely say that it's a remake because it is such a different game. I mean, they took like the bare bones of the original Metroid and, you know, just built this like entirely new game around it. But yeah, I mean, that's a perfect example. And look at one of the best remakes arguably of all time is Super Mario All-Stars on Super Nintendo.
Yep.
They took four classic Mario games and put a new coat of paint on it. And I mean, it's awesome. That's some of the best versions of those games.
Yeah.
Resident Evil remake comes to mind.
What?
The Resident Evil remake.
Ooh, oh, yeah. Another good one. Very good one.
That's not a Nintendo one, though, is it?
Oh, well, it was a GameCube exclusive for many, many years. So Nintendo didn't make it. But yeah, obviously they were behind it since it was a console exclusive. But, nice.
Yeah, for me, I look at Ocarina of Time first, I think, or not Ocarina of Time, Wind Waker for the Wii U, I believe.
Wii U, yeah.
I saw a friend play through that, and he's a huge Zelda fan and had nothing but high praise for it. Just absolutely loved being able to go back into it again.
Well, see, I was going to bring that up too, but I don't know if that's more of a remaster than a remake.
I guess that's true. That is an interesting line.
But even that, if Chris, you know, is talking about like even just re-releasing games like that, I mean, Wind Waker on Wii U fixed a lot of problems that the original Wind Waker had. Like, they give you the option to sail way faster than you could on the GameCube one. So it's like, for that reason alone, I'd rather play that one instead of the original.
Yeah.
But like Ryan said, the original
Triforce Quest.
Yeah. Oh yeah, that's right. That's another big one.
Yeah, I guess my better personal experience would be with Omega Ruby, one of the Pokemon remakes that they did.
Oh, yeah.
And that one actually, so it came out after Pokemon X and Y, when Pokemon kind of went 3D, I guess you could say, instead of just top-down. And they turned an older, set of games from that old, you know, top-down style into the new 3D style, and they did it incredibly well. I actually almost had more fun playing Omega Ruby than I did X, and I loved both of them. So,
Yeah, because even like Fire Red and Leaf Green, like those were really good remakes of the original, like Blue and Red.
Yeah. So
Yeah,
yeah,
so I don't know.
I don't think there's any real downside, like what Ryan was saying.
I was gonna say I never really felt like Nintendo releasing these remakes really took away from other game development. I mean, obviously it's gonna take away from it somewhat, you know, instead of those people could be working on a like completely original game or a sequel.
Right.
But I never felt like, oh my gosh, they've been working on this, you know, I when we could have had this, you know, so.
Well, and it's kind of an interesting idea in that it kind of gives you a new game and an old game at the same time. You know, like I will probably like be playing through this Metroid game for the first time. Well, not probably. I will be playing through this Metroid game for the first time, having never played the original. And so for a lot of people, you know, this is the first time they've ever played it.
Yeah, no, that's a good point too. And I
Especially
guess
for
the
those youngins.
well the I guess the one complaint I could think of that comes to mind with some of these remakes are remakes of games that only get put on the handhelds. So like Ocarina of Time and Majora's Mask, those remakes are only on 3DS, and I'm like, oh my gosh, I would love to be able to play these on the TV.
Like on the Switch.
Yeah, exactly. Like I would much rather have Metroid Samus Returns on Switch just so I have the option. What's another one that I was gonna say?
Like there are so many games that I would buy on the Switch right now that I've already played. And I've already done that with Mario Kart. You know, there's so many that I would love to have the mobile and the TV option, you know, and maybe with a little bit of remaster done to it for the graphics. Like sitting on a gold mine,
I
Nintendo.
know. It just kills me because, I mean, you know, I guess you can arguably say that, you know, the Majora's Mask and Ocarina of Time remakes are better than the originals, but they're stuck in that handheld. Like, I don't know if we'll ever see those on a big screen. Like, you could play the originals on the big screen. So, yeah, I say keep doing it. I don't
Ditto.
think, yeah, they haven't messed anything up yet, so keep it going.
I agree.
Good topic. Good topic.
Yeah. Thanks, Chris. All right, Trent, do you want to take us out?
Sure. Thanks again, everybody, for joining us for this episode of the Brief Nerdity Podcast. We invite you to keep on submitting those listener submitted topics and questions. We love to address those, and it gives us something fun to talk about. So reach out to us on email. It's briefnerdity@gmail.com. Our website is briefnerdity.com. And briefnerdy.com/iTunes to subscribe to the podcast and give us a like and a comment and everything over there. That would be great. So we'll see you guys next week.
Oh, and one other thing.
Yes.
There's an exclusive Switch game coming out in the eShop this Thursday, Golf Story. I'm really excited about it.
Oh
I
my
don't know much
gosh.
about it other than what they've shown in the few trailers that they released, but I really hope I can come back next week and say, guys, it's everything that I wanted it to be.
You're fired.
I legitimately hope you enjoy your game.
No, do you guys not know what I'm talking about with Golf
No,
Story?
I do, yeah.
no idea.
It's like it's not like regular golf. Like it's all themed around golf, but it's a whole RPG, and I think you're solving like a murder mystery
What?
while you play golf. Look
Yep.
it up. Look up Golf Story. Like it looks incredible.
Is it already in
So,
the eShop now,
no,
or?
it comes out Thursday. They just announced today it's coming out this Thursday. So,
Well, I mean, do you think it's there for pre-order?
I know it showed up in the European eShop.
Because I've actually got my Switch in my hand, so I was going to look there.
Yeah, I don't know if it's in the US one or not, but yeah, it's in the European one. But
Coming soon.
I forgot to mention, did you ever finish Rabbids, TJ?
no, I finished chapter 2. I beat the second world boss.
Yeah, the best is yet to come.
Oh, I'm still playing it. Don't get me wrong. I told you, I like how I can just pick up that game every once in a while and play through a couple chapters and stuff, so.
All right. Well, good night, everybody.
Good
Good
night.
night.
Golf story.